I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Welcome back to Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Linnell in for GP. This radio program, exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morad, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. So we did this with running backs. What day was that? Yesterday?
Yesterday.
Day before? I can't. All the days run together these days, my friend. Where our guy Warren Sharp had that position group ranked really low, 29th in the NFL, I believe, ahead of a couple of running back rooms you don't want to be associated
with. Yeah, pretty much.
Right? Whether they were 27th or 28th or 24th, doesn't matter. Point is, not very well thought of league-wide. Nothing dynamic there. I understand not wanting to go spend $20 million on somebody, but an upgrade was available. They didn't. Now another position group comes out. This is PFF, Linnell, not kind to the secondary.
No, they are not. So they're only... We talked about the running back ranking not being kind to Washington. PFF's isn't either. Let's just start with the top two secondaries in the National Football League. I don't disagree with it, especially after the additions that these two teams have made. Baltimore comes in at number one, and when you consider that they drafted the top safety in the draft of Malachi Starks out of Georgia, they brought in Jaire Alexander from the Green Bay Packers. They already have Kyle Hamilton and Marlon Humphrey, who are considered, you know, top of their league or top of the league at their position. It's a good group. It's a veteran
They're
group.
Unbelievable.
They're
it's
unbelievable.
Humphrey, it's Starks. And Kyle Hamilton's probably one of the best 15, 20 players in the NFL. They drafted a guy in the first round last year that we never even talk about.
Exactly.
Just because the other guys are so damn good.
Talk
that's
Nate Wiggins
the best secondary. That's right. That's the
mm-hmm.
best secondary in the NFL. No problem.
Number two is the Kansas City Chiefs. Trent McDuffie has been, you know, one of the top four or five corners in the NFL over the past several years. I like the youngins that they have as well. They drafted Noel Williams out of Cal. He, to me, was one of the best young corners in the draft as well. So that's a legitimate group. Denver comes in three with Pat Surtain. Obviously, you get that. They drafted Jahdae Barron in the draft as well. The Texans, I love the Texans. I wanted Kamari Lassiter here last year. He is playing opposite Derek Stingley, and that group has been elite as well. Well, now go down to the bottom of the list, because that's where the Commanders are at. Danny, there are four secondaries, that PFF says is worse than Washington's. He has the Dolphins, Panthers, Cowboys, Raiders. You don't want to be in that company. He has Washington ranked 28th, talking about PFF, and they start off saying this, a shot in the arm to you. The Commanders' secondary was one of the worst in the NFL in 2024, yet the team still came one win away from a Super Bowl appearance. So they didn't like the secondary last year. They clearly don't like it this year as they come in ranked 28th in the National Football League. I'm not going to say that I think they're 28th. I think at their worst they could be that. But I think if everything goes to plan, if Marshon Lattimore is healthy and back to his, you know, former Pro Bowl form, then I think it'll be good. If Trey Amos can show that, like, hey, despite there being a lot of volatility with young corners, if he can show that, hey, I can hold down one side of the island, then you'll feel good. I think the key part of this secondary that I think is going to be critical, how this transition works out, Mikey Samuels still going back to the slot. Now, I know all of you think that Mikey Samuels was the greatest corner in the National Football League, but the reality is when he was playing in the slot in the first month of the season, he gave up the most touchdowns in the National Football League. Now, I know Washington faced some pretty damn good wide receivers during that first month plus of the year, but him in the slot, him moving back to the slot, is not some foregone conclusion that everything is going to be peaches and roses. I think he could play. I think he helps the run defense by playing in the slot because he is just hell on wheels and isn't scared of anything. But if his transition back to the slot does not go as planned, if Marshon Lattimore isn't back to that Pro Bowl form, then what is this group?
So I think the one element that people aren't really ready for or seeing is when you look at Jonathan Jones and Mikey Sanders still, I think they're really similar pieces.
Me too.
So I think when, for the sake of argument, you motion somebody into the slot trying to get a better matchup, you don't have to worry about that. Because so sometimes it'll be Jones in the slot, sometimes it'll be Sanders still. I don't think they're just going to go mechanically, this is where you are. You are a boundary corner here, you're boundary there. I think there'll be multiple. That some of that diversity of the position, I think, it is there. I like Amos a lot as a selection. I was all in on that. I thought that was smart. He was someone that I wanted, was thrilled that he fell to them or fell or was available to them, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I like pieces. To me, it's less about Sandra Still. I know I'm going to get, you know, a guy that's going to punch above his weight class, that's going to be a bit of a bulldog, that's going to break up some of those bubble screens and fight through blocks and be tough. To me, the central thing is Lattimore. Like, this to me is the alpha, the omega, and everything in between. Last year, it was Benjamin St. Juste. It was Michael Davis. Ugh. It was Benjamin St. Davis. It was Michael St. Juste. And it stunk.
Yeah.
It wasn't good enough, period, end of story. They got destroyed. So everybody is focused so much on the run defense. And I get that. They gave up a lot of rushing yards to people. My point always was, when they said, okay, we're going to stop the run, and they committed lots of resources to it, they did. The Baltimore game to me is a microcosm of who they are in the series. If everyone remembers the Baltimore game,
yep.
Here's what happened. They said, not Derrick Henry, not in the first half.
Yep.
Not going to happen. So Baltimore tried a couple times. They got stuffed and they said, okay, Zay Flowers, go 9 for a trillion. And they had no answer. He ran around every one of those guys,
including Mikey Sanders, too.
And he was open.
Yeah.
So this is, God, we're getting killed by this. So let's actually try to cover somebody. And then Derrick Henry ran for 190,000 yards in the second half. Numbers approximate. That, to me, is who they were. They improved that, to me, by going, let's beef up the defensive front. What about the rest of it? We beefed up the defensive front, and that's the response, and that's the answer. It's counting on Lattimore to be something that he was not last year. The rest of the league, PFF, whoever, is looking at it the way I'm looking at it, going, nope, that's a mistake. I still... annoyed's not the right word. This group, as you said earlier in the show, we're talking about something else, has certainly earned the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
In years past, when I would look at Marty and Ron, and their incompetence, when I would go, okay, I don't see this. And when I would say I don't see it, it would turn out bad most of the time.
Yeah.
This is one I don't see. And when I said that last year about their offense,
the offensive line,
mm-hmm. And when I can't believe they're going into the season with this receiving core until they signed Noah Brown, someone that was cast off of a playoff team. It was cut. It was basically a training camp cut.
Yeah.
That became their number two. I went, I can't believe this is your prize rookie quarterback. That's what you're doing. Worked out pretty good, didn't it? So that, to me, buys a lot of credibility. But in years past, when I go, I don't see it the way you see it, and it turns out your team's going to lose a lot and give up a ton of stuff, I don't get it. To me, this was a golden opportunity to go get Travis Ward, Carlton Davis, Paulson Adebo, DJ Reed, Brandon Stevens, Darius Slay. I mean, that's an expensive one, a one-year deal. But you could have upgraded that position, still drafted a rookie to be the heir apparent, but they didn't do that. They went middle tier, which is where they loved to shop to get some value. They went middle tier Jonathan Jones, second rounder Trey Amos, and it's putting a lot of the eggs in Marshawn Lattimore's basket.
It is, and I also think it's putting a big onus on this front four. Because if you think about it, you were talking about investing money in a Carlton Davis or a Charvarius Ward. Well, their big money free agent signing was Javon Kinlaw. Now, we could argue till the cows come home about whether or not that's going to pay off or come to fruition. But to your point, I can agree with you when I say, you know, money could have been better spent at the cornerback spot. But I think the reason it wasn't is a universal belief in that building, and this is where it goes back to what you're talking about, that Marshawn Lattimore is going to get it right. I thought, you know, he won me over, and I know clearly it doesn't take much to win me over if this won me over. When he spoke during mandatory minicamp and said, yeah, man, you know, I wanted to be out there for my teammates last year. I was hurt. I was trying to play through an injury and show that I belonged. While it hurt the team in the short term, in the long term, I think it's a play that earns respect in the locker room and earns trust amongst the coaching staff. It gets you an attaboy from a radio host like me for playing through your injury. He can't be as bad as he was last year. When at times it was like, there's no way we gave up assets for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I give him the benefit of the doubt and want to believe that he was hurt. To your point, though, he is the linchpin in this secondary. Because if he can figure it out, it can hold down one half of the field. I can pick through Trey Amos, Jonathan Jones, and Mikey Samuelson to be my other outside corner. I worry about who's going to be stopping A.J. Brown. Who lines up across from CeeDee Lamb? Who lines up across from Malik Nabers? When you're in this division, you need a bona fide number one corner. And Washington's thought process is that Marshawn Lattimore is that. Whether they're right or not, we'll find out, you know, sooner rather than later. But I happen to believe Marshawn Lattimore will be good. The other part of this is the pass rush has got to get home. If they can generate a consistent pass rush without having to, you know, send extra pieces out of the secondary, and you can have seven in coverage at a time, then you'll be okay. But I know that's a big if.
No, it's a major thing. What did Lattimore say at OTAs? Do you remember? Oh, nothing. It was never. Anyway, so the big deal for me, I'm just doing his thing, is, again, if they're right and they're confident in him, because I said this at the time, it would have been a tough pill to swallow to move on from him, having given up a couple draft picks. And I get why they did. I endorsed the deal at the time, and we've gone through this a number of times this offseason, where the analogy I used, and I use this a bunch, so apologies if you're hearing it again, is if you ever watch Formula One or NASCAR or something like that, they're driving. They're really far along in the race, and they're going, oh, my God, we're way further ahead than we thought we'd be. We got a chance to win this thing, but we got a flat tire, or the tire's about to blow. What do we do? And someone comes up next to you and going, I got a tire. You want to buy it?
Yeah.
That cost in that moment a little bit more than it would have cost in the offseason or totally otherwise. Agree. It was worth the risk to you to go, I need to buy this tire right now. Otherwise, I got no shot to win the race. So I'm gonna give it a go. I endorsed it. It made sense. I knew the risks. Oft injured, hasn't been healthy in a long time, hasn't played a full season, hasn't been that all pro in almost 4 years, calendar years wise. I got it. I endorsed the deal at the time. I saw him play and I went, oh my God, they got a lemon. Oh my God, this is terrible. Now, if he plays great, because I haven't seen him do that. If he plays great and they're right, egg on my face, I'll apologize to whoever I have to apologize to. I just don't share the confidence they do in this one. And it doesn't sound like PFF does either. When you're looking at this secondary that, again, was one of the worst in the NFL last year, I'm the only one. I know I sound very Chris Russell-ing in here, where I saw this and no one else did, and I'm smart, you're stupid. Again, I'm not saying everyone's stupid, but you are all stupid. I know I'm doing a Russell bit here. Everybody was so concerned about the run defense. I went, it's the pass defense to me.
See, that's...
It's the pass defense. It's their secondary is one of the worst in the sport. They knew that, which is why they basically said, we'd rather give up eight on the ground than countless first downs through the air and touchdowns and otherwise. Kenny Pickett took out that double-pronged fork.
Oh, my goodness.
And the vibrating knife and just carved their asses up once Jalen Hurts went down. Okay, anybody who wanted to throw could throw. That was the deal. And so they were willing to give up some ground gains. Okay, so my point is, they didn't care about that all that much and went after to beef up that run defense. That was their strategy this offseason to improve every element of the defense, Linnell.
So the thing, and our pal Warren Sharp actually put this out, I'm trying to find it and get you the exact names. If you're making the argument that Danny's making, that the secondary should have been addressed more, should have been considered more of a problem spot. Think about the quarterbacks they played down the stretch last year. It's not Ben DiNucci, Jake Haner, Kenny Pickett, a rookie Michael Penix getting his second ever start, Trey Lance. So I can make the argument that, they didn't play great quarterbacks last year, and it still wasn't all that good. You now give them this year's slate of quarterbacks, and you go, if it's not better, then it could get potentially sticky at that position. I know it's a separate conversation, but I do believe their pass rush has a real opportunity to take some of the load off of the secondary. I think if they can get pressure with four and five and I have to commit eight guys to rush in the quarterback, then maybe the extra guys in coverage help you out. Washington blitzed at like a top eight rate last year in the NFL. So they were one of the most blitz-happy teams in the league. Why? Because Dante Fowler and the quietest 10.5 sacks you'll ever see, it wasn't enough. They did not consistently get pressure just by sending four. I think the goal and the hope is that you get a little bit better pass rush from the guys that you have up front, and then the guys in the back end help you out. But a fan would say, well, they didn't really improve the pass rush. No, they didn't.
They probably took a step back.
They probably took a step back.
To your point, by the way, the fifth highest blitz percentage in the NFL last year, which tells you you can't get home with four.
Yeah.
It's time to do this right here, my friend. We got the poll of the day. Great Nanny's poll of the day is presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage, local, long distance, residential, or commercial. 3 decades of best-in-class service and experience. The poll posted right now, 106.7 The Fan. Pro Football Focus rank The Commanders, secondary 28th, headed into training camp. What's your confidence level in the local 53 secondary as currently constructed? Very confident, somewhat confident, kind of concerned, highly concerned. I said highly concerned, which may be an exaggeration, maybe too far, but that's where I'm at. PFF's got you 28th. Not to say that it's gospel, right? But this, to me, was the weakness. I am hopeful Trey Amos does what Mikey Sanderstall did last year. And I'm looking on paper here, Linnell, and I'm going, okay, last year at this time, Noah Igbinoghene was going to get huge snap counts. It was going to be Michael Davis. It was going to be Benjamin St. Juste. It's not that anymore. They're different names. I would take Jonathan Jones over Michael Davis.
Yeah.
I would take Trey Amos over, again, Michael Davis or
St. Juste,
or maybe, again, we don't know, but I think over St. Juste. The idea of event for St. Juste played well at points for this team. I know no one wants to hear that, but he did at various times.
I hear that.
With some of the strength and length and bothering people. Got a little handsy. Mm-hmm.
That's my worry with Trey Amos.
That's my worry,
too. When you have young corners coming into the NFL and you think about what he thrived at in the SEC, it was bump and run. It was being handsy. It was being physical. Training camp is going to be big for him. It would not surprise me, and I know it would drive fans nuts, if your starting cornerback tandem week one is Mikey.
Jones and Lattimore.
On the outside.
I think it's exactly
and
what
then,
it's
and
be.
Then Mikey on the inside.
But I think, you're going to live in nickel 90% of the time. Not 90, 78% of the time.
See, that's the thing that
you
I
don't think?
That I go back and forth with, too. They didn't want to play nickel that much last year, but the Jordan McGee injury really stopped them from playing their base more than they wanted to, where they would be in that three linebacker set where it's Louvu, Wagner, and then McGee.
We might fundamentally disagree there. I don't think they wanted to do that. I think that was going to be something they did.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, to them, Jeremy Chinn doing both.
Right.
Now they got Will Harris trying to do both. Again, I don't know about.
I have no confidence in that. Yeah. I'm just saying.
And we haven't even gotten to that.
Yeah.
Right? 800-636-1067. You heard the question. PFF's got them 28th. I don't know that it's 28th. Maybe it could be 26th. Maybe it could be 29th. I don't care. Point is, they're at the bottom of the league. Did they do enough this offseason to improve that secondary? And you agree with me that it's as big a problem, and if not bigger than some of the other things they were facing last year. It's Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Is a phone number to get in touch with me, Danny, with that guy, Linnell. Did they do enough in the secondary? My answer is no, but we'll get to that here in a moment. And a reminder, we're going to spin the wheel in advance of training camp for a Washington football player. We do not know who it's going to land on. Whoever it does, we will discuss that player. Ben, what happened in Summer League, buddy, just now? What's going on?
Well, I've been checking in on our Terp, Derek Queen, and he did have a nice behind-the-back pass to one Hunter Dickinson, which Maryland fans might not be too happy to see that connection come into fruition there. But anyways, Queen struggled a little bit. I think he's getting used to the NBA game, adjusting. I've seen a couple times where he's tried to put the ball on the floor, and the control just hasn't quite been there for one Derek Queen so far. A couple of good attacks to the basket, but has to be better finishing around the rim. That's what I've seen so far.
Yeah, so the reason I thank you for the insight, that is our Summer League correspondent from the update desk, or not the update, the producer's studio right there. It's just to tell Maryland fans, sorry.
Yeah.
Today, not great. I would, if I could just produce something, it's from deep in my pocket. It's a little bit of calm it down. Just calm it down.
Yeah.
Turn down the rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Slow your roll. Pump the brakes. I like Derek Queen too, but settle down.
How often do I get to say anything positive about Maryland athletics, Danny? Tell me.
Every day on your various platforms. You, what you do is you're a shoehorner and you're my guy. But you take that conversation like Hercules' labors and you turn that river towards Maryland sports. That's what you want. That's where you live. You're a Maryland guy and God bless you. You love you. He a Terp and they a Terp and he's a Terp and everyone's a Terp, et cetera. But sometimes it didn't go that great. Today's one of those days. So today's not a win, but we'll be fine.
But I've never said anything good about football. Have you heard me say anything good about football?
And to your credit, you've not.
How
and
could
good
you?
For you.
But how could you?
Good for you.
I know the limitations.
So my thing here is I'm taking a personal pat on the back. I obviously want him to succeed, but the trade that their GM pulled off was probably the dumbest in the past decade, giving the Atlanta Hawks a unprotected 2020, that's next year, a 2026 first-round pick to move up for Derek Queen. Do the Pelicans think they're going to be in the playoffs next year? Do the Pelicans think they're going to be good? Why are you giving up that type of draft capital for that? He a Terp. Derek Queen's great. He is what you call a collegiate basketball player.
Oh.
Not an NBA guy.
Oh.
A collegiate basketball player. I do not see him having the same success in the NBA that he did in College Park in the 1 year. I just don't.
Well, they'll let him travel like he did against Colorado State to hit some shots. Come on, we're having fun. We're having fun. It's just fun. It's just fun.
Thank you.
I'm just funning. That's all I'm doing is having fun. We're joking around. We're having jocular times.
Oh, no.
Frank, no, not the time. We're just having it. We're high-fiving.
I mean, that'd be fair to say.
Thank you, Coach. He gets it. It's just, we're just funning.
You know what's all of, but this is the thing, and now I feel like I'm about to go on a tangent here, because everyone tells me, do not fret over Summer League. Do not worry about what you see in Summer League. Johnny Davis happened, people. When Johnny Davis, the number 10 overall pick, went to Summer League and looked like he did not belong, even in like a Montgomery County pickup game, that's when I realized Summer League does matter if you're bad. Last year, Alex Starr was bad offensively in Summer League. He was bad offensively this year for the Wizards. When you look at the shooting splits and everyone gets all horned up over the performance against Nikola Jokic. But he's got some work to do. I will blow a gasket tomorrow night if Alex Starr gets outplayed by Kamal Malawach. I will leave it at that.
I would leave some in the tank for gasket blowing. I'd pace yourself a little bit, but I smell what you're cooking there. So my axiom. We've worked together enough now. I think you're aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like great performances in Summer League. That's not something I get hyped up over. I used to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this dude dropped 30 in a Summer League game. Now I know.
Yeah.
Okay. I will not make that mistake again. You can't even remember some of these names. It's like preseason superheroes for the then Redskins over the years, right? But we need the alarm bells to go off when you can't do it in Summer League.
Mm-hmm.
When it doesn't
when it looks
work,
hard, yeah.
When it's the Johnny Davis corollary, right? So I don't think Queen was that. 13-10 today, 7 turnovers. Tells you kind of the story that Ben was talking about. But, you know, shot decent from the field and knocked down a 3. I think it had a step back later in the game when things were a bit desperate. But totally fine. We're just funning around a little bit with you Maryland folk, all right? That's all that happened. It's jokes. We wish him well.
I meant good what kid. I said.
800-636-1067. I'm going to get back to the secondary. So their plan seems to be, talking about the Washington, the football guys, their plan here, Linnell, seems to be very clear. They think that stopping the run on first down, right, where you last year you had a free 5 yards, 7 yards, whatever. They're one of the worst teams at run defense over the course of the year. We all saw that. They think that stopping that will give you more advantageous looks. This is just me looking at their actions, not any kind of statement. It's not like Dan Quinn was like, here's my plan for defense. But like this is what their actions say. They think that getting stouter, beefier, bigger, stronger up front was the key to everything with this defense. Because that's what they did. They didn't go invest in a corner. And I had a Twitter, I met Funny Danny, bring up that DJ Reed, by the way, did say it was between the Lions and Washington.
Mm-hmm. So they did. So they did make the attempt.
Tried to a degree, which tells me something, right? That they recognize maybe a little bit, but they didn't go get any of the other guys, which again is their prerogative. So what they did do was overhaul that defensive front, right? By saying we are going to get bigger, stronger, less. You're less able to move us around and push us off the spot. That, to me, was their solve for their defensive woes. And I get that. That's one strategy to go about it. That's an undervalued sort of way to improve a defense. In theory, if it works, is to make a team one-dimensional, then your mediocre pass rushers get a bit better. It's like finding a way, I don't know, this is not a great baseball analogy, but you play against a pitcher, and you go, if I never have to worry about the curveball, I'll be a better fastball hitter.
Right.
That's kind of the deal here. So I see the strategy. I don't know that it's enough.
So I do disagree with you with like the – I think if you were to poll coaches at every level, defensive-minded coaches, defensive coordinators at every level, high school, little league, college, pros, the number one thing, the number one like motto on defense is stop the run. Even Riverboat Ron, stop the run all the way. Stop the run all the way of the quarterback. I mean, really. It matters. And here's why it matters so much to me. You were kind of just making the point. If you can make a team one-dimensional, and they stunk at this, they were bad at this last year. If you could put teams in obvious passing situations on third down, your pass rush is able to tee off Pinnatier's back, go get the quarterback. It's no fun when it's third and four, and you have no damn clue what the other team is going to do. You don't get out of your stance the same way. You don't fire off the ball as quickly. So I do think stopping the run was the most important thing, still should be considered the most important thing. But I want to go back to something you said a moment ago, and I said this earlier this offseason. Ben, you can attest to this. I think you're right, Danny. They're going to pump up Marshawn Lattimore. They're going to tell us how confident they are in him, and I'm sure they are internally. But the moves that they tried to make, though, suggest otherwise, right? Trying to throw a big bag at DJ Reed obviously didn't land him, but you tried. You bring in Super Bowl champion Jonathan Jones. You bring back Noah Igbinoghene, right? You invest premium draft capital, a second-round pick at corner. So that tells me that maybe, just maybe, you're not all that confident in Marshawn Lattimore, or you're moving with extreme foresight and are trying to put yourself in position to where if something goes wrong, you don't have to hit the panic button like you did last trade deadline.
So we're getting off on a tangent here, but I think the axiom about run stopping, that's what everybody who played football came up in. Like, for my son's 7-year-old flag football team, way more important to stop some of the handoffs and reverses than it is to stop the pass.
Right.
Right? At this level, where the running back doesn't make $70 million, the quarterback does. And it's not because he's running. It's because he's throwing. Run stop themselves. Holding penalties, blown assignments, TFLs, procedure stuff. The run eventually runs aground. Even bad run defenses aren't giving up 10 yards a carry.
So let me correct it then. It's the explosive runs that they need to slow down next year.
And that's obvious. Yes.
Like they were amongst the bottom five in terms of runs of 10 or more yards allowed.
Absolutely.
That is backbreaking.
Absolutely.
That is tough.
Right.
Like, I think that's your point, and I agree with you on that. To me, it's more specific than just stopping the run. It's, to me, being better on first and second down against the run and then limiting the explosive runs, the runs of 10 or more yards. And by the way, we're going to find out right off the rip whether or not they got better at stopping the run. You got joint practices against Mike Vrabel and the Patriots. Mm-hmm. You don't think Travion Henderson's touching it a bunch? You got joint practice against the Ravens. Four out of your first five games, you got Bijan Robinson, Amarion Hampton, Josh Jacobs. You're going to find out right away whether you're better.
And you could see, looking at their own division, they went, we can't let Saquon Barkley do that to us again.
Yeah.
Because he dictated everything in those games. Even when he was being held down, it was because they said, we have to dedicate every resource to it.
And turn Kenny Pickett into a Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And when we had to do a little bit extra, I mean, you saw that they had that back and forth game up there. It was ugly. It was the short week, I believe, when we were there in Philadelphia. And it was kind of a rock fight for a while. They didn't get the fourth down, and they were doing an okay job. Then all of a sudden, Barkley ripped off a couple big ones, big catch and run, big regular run, and the game was over. That was that. He's the guy that's on their mind, and that's why they did what they did. But looking at this secondary, again, I just kind of go, I get that. I get that Barkley monster is looming, but you got to stop, name that receiver, Neighbors, CeeDee Lamb. You got to deal with this upcoming schedule with excellent quarterbacks and excellent wideouts all up and down.
It becomes much easier to defend those top-of-the-class receivers if you don't have to worry about the running attack.
And that's the theory. That's exactly what they're going
that's
with.
That's the theory, yes. Yeah.
But to me, this league is what happened on 3rd and 10. That 4th and 8 in must-have time. Like down in, down out, these things kind of average out. They don't, though, in those winning time moments. Right. And those like the things that everybody sort of remembers from games. Watching this quarterback show back again, it's just so incredible.
I love
but
it.
But you forget some of the nuances in these different moments. Like the Chiefs were going to lose to the Cincinnati Bengals, who got off to this terrible start, but they were done.
Yep.
Converted a 4th and 16. Yep. Right. I mean, that's the win right there. That's it.
But did we stop the run, sir?
The superstar playmaker making a trillion did the superstar playmaker thing. Anyway, it's a good thought. Good conversation on that. We're going to have a wheel spin. That's right. We spin the wheel.
Spin the wheel.
Talk about a member of the football team as we lead up to training camp. We do not know who it's going to land on. People think we do. You're wrong.
We don't know
who it's going to land on. And we'll discuss that player. We'll do that next. Plus, got a Nats leadoff for you in the 6 o'clock hour. Plenty to go. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
The Nationals will get underway this evening, 7:45 first pitch, 7:15 pregame with a couple guys named Charlie and Dave, who I think you know. We are Grant and Danny, but you'll notice there's no Grant, just me, Danny, and my pal Linnell Willingham hanging out today and tomorrow as well. Get you a Nats lid off before we get out of here and discuss the player that's about to be named when we spin the wheel for the local football guys.
More pressure. Jackson slides up and goes down. Dietrich Wise gets to him. Williams batted at the line and incomplete. Dietrich Wise swats it down. 2nd and 10. Purdy wanted to go long. He was covered initially. Still is, and he gets sacked. Dietrich Wise, captain of this defense. Play action this time. Pressure coming and swarmed under. Dietrich Wise Jr. with the sack.
So I've been a Dietrich Wise guy. It's Dietrich? How about that?
Dietrich, yeah.
I learned something today. That's egg on my face. This whole offseason I've been Dietriching, not Dietriching. So good for you. There you go. Dietrich Wise.
Yeah.
This is one of those under-the-radar acquisitions for this franchise that I think might pay dividends. I don't know. It's in the unsexy category, certainly, right? But it's got that Dorrance Armstrong kind of feel where this is a rotational player that has never had gaudy stats, but maybe with a larger role, .. Again, he's here to set the edge. He's here to occupy a blocker or two and let some of the fast guys roam and get after the football. But I wonder how productive he can be in this system, Linnell.
I do, too. The interesting thing to me is he is billed as this run stuffer. And I think the different body type being in that room is going to help out. He's 6'5", 275 pounds. It's just different. It's going to be better at, you know, being physical at the point of attack, keeping the outside arm free. All things you need to do to set a good edge as a defensive end. His pass rush upside is actually really intriguing to me. He's got 17 sacks over the past 3 years combined. And when you think about the limited role that he was playing in New England, you put him in a situation where he's garnering more snaps. Is there some pass rush juice there that exists as well? The other thing that kind of made me fall in love with him right off the rip. Was out there for voluntary or mandatory minicamp. And the last guy off of the field after like Debo Samuel and company are eating ices in the locker room hallway and they're doing on their commando socials bit. And it's Dietrich Wise.
See?
Working by himself out in the sweltering heat, working on pass rush moves. No one else is on the field but Dietrich Wise. Having a guy in your program with championship pedigree that's done it at the highest level that isn't a me guy, I'm always in for. You know what I compare this signing to and the similar impact that I think he'll have? I call him the 2025 Alamide Zaccheaus. When Zaccheaus was signed last year, most people were like, huh? Who's that? How do you say his name? Oz is what the damn offense coordinator didn't even know who he was. And yet he had major production and came up big for this organization a lot after not being signed for much and not having many expectations. I think you can say the same thing about Dietrich Wise.
I wonder with the increased role, I mean, because he's a rotational piece in New England, spent his whole career there.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, defensive tackle position, defensive line position, DN rather. You know, unless you're T.J. Watt or Myles Garrett, one of the stars, you're part of that rotation, yeah. Right? You're coming off the field. So it's always kind of varies in terms of some of these stats, but listed as a starter only, you know, a third of the time last year, right?
So
yes. 2 years ago, 13 starts out of 16 games, 16 starts in 2022, but a guy that plays a lot,
yeah. Right?
He's going to be on the field. Same way with Dorrance Armstrong. Mm-hmm. You look at some of the numbers and go, what's the deal? So he maxed that at 7.5 sacks, and I kind of pencil him in that 5 to 7 range
mm-hmm.
here, and I wonder what we'd be satisfied with.
From him?
From him.
See, for me, after last year watching Dante Fowler get 10.5, I'm not so much so caught up in the number. It's the impact. Do you affect the quarterback enough? That's kind of how I'm judging him.
I just haven't seen those gaudy pressure numbers.
Yeah.
Like, so some of the times we'd look at like Jonathan Allen, for example. I know a different position. But you'd go, he had a year, I think it was 3.5 sacks. And you go, man, what's wrong with him? And my answer is nothing.
Right.
Look at the quarterback hits. Look at the pressures. Right. Look at the percentages. If you redo all of that with those same qualifying numbers, you'd get 9 sacks, and that's what he did the following year.
Right.
Right. I don't see that with him. I don't see that dynamic pass rushing chops. Maybe. And I'm hoping they found something that they unlock it, etc. But he's a guy that's basically playing around half the snaps on average over the last couple of years for a New England team that's going a different direction, wants to get younger, wants, you know, a different regime, etc. He's a rotational piece here that I think is going to see an uptick, but it's not going to be he doesn't come off the field until
no,
he's too tired.
I don't think it's that at all. I think the best way to categorize what his role is going to be, he will be your first and second down defensive end most likely. When you're in those clear rushing situations and you know you've got to set the edge, I think he's the guy. To me, like, I don't think this pass rush unit as a whole needs to have somebody that has 10.5 sacks per se, like last year with Dante Fowler. I'm more in your camp of where I'm okay with if we got 6 dudes that have at least 7 sacks or in that 5 to 7.5 range.
Then you're Philadelphia.
Then you're Philadelphia and right. you're pass rush by committee and you're not too reliant or dependent upon one guy.
So you need an uptick somewhere, though.
Something's got
to
happen.
I mean,
yes.
You have to. So I think the guy that's going to, I think the entire plan now is Luvu passing down pass rusher. Call him a linebacker, call him an edge, call him a stand. I don't care what you call him, mm-hmm. but he's getting after the quarterback. I think you're going to remove a lot of his, in the flat, short route kind of, pass defense responsibilities
yeah.
and say get after the quarterback. I think that's kind of what they're going to unveil this coming year. Otherwise, I just don't know where the pass rush comes from.
So everyone's enamored by Dante Fowler's 10.5 sacks. Dorrance Armstrong actually led this team in pressures last year. So I think it's a John Allen situation where maybe his sack total, maybe he
and
can
down
be
the stretch, he was good.
Yes, in the postseason, he was good. I think he's got that in him. He has those capabilities. It's a reason he was one of the few multi-year deals that they gave out during their first free agency here. I think he's got the chops to do it. I think Dietrich Wise, though, provides. He's going to do the stuff that no one else wants to do. It's not fun. I got in trouble for it all the time in high school. Liddell, stay outside. It's so easy as a pass rusher to want to dip inside and take the quicker route to the quarterback, but you compromise the rest of your defense. And we saw that a lot with Chase Young when he was playing here. The key job of a defensive end, first and foremost, is to set the edge and do not let someone outside of you. You are the contained player. Funnel everything back inside. I think they have someone in Dietrich that isn't enamored by the glory that comes with getting sacked.
Stay in your lane, so to speak.
He just wants to play his role and be a star in it.
You want to chime in, 800-636-1067. Got a Nats leadoff for you. We'll do that next. Plus, just some stat ideas and prognostications on Dietrich Wise. Get that straight next on The Fan.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall is back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.